Today on Path of Grace.
In verse 2, Paul first encouraged his readers to be super prayerful. He says, continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. I want to encourage you to take that to heart, to be prayerful about what you say to people and what you post on Facebook or what you tweet or however it is you're communicating with people. Continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it. You know what we need to do? I think we need to ask Father for the right words. Before you type that response to a person or respond to them verbally face to face, ask Father to help you reflect His heart and His nature in your words. Ask Him to help you not to be self-righteous in it or to look down at others like the Pharisee in the parable which Jesus told. This is so important because once those words go out there, there is no taking them back, even if it's done verbally. You can't put the words back in your mouth. And listen, this is a voice of experience. How I wish I could take back a million words that have spewed out of my mouth in the past. Words that I spoke without thinking and without praying. Start off today by reading a few verses from Philippians chapter 2. This is verses 1 through 4. Listen carefully to what the Apostle Paul says. If there is any consolation in Christ, if any comfort of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and mercy, fulfill my joy by being like-minded, having the same mind, being of one accord, of one mind, and then listen to this. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. Wow, he says, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. Conceit, yeah, as in the word conceited. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition and don't be conceited. And then he says, in lowliness of mind, esteem others better than you esteem yourself. What the heck does lowliness of mind mean? Well, the original Greek word is about 4 miles long, and there's no way that I can possibly pronounce it, so I'm not even going to try. But here's the way the word is defined by Strong's. Number one, having a humble opinion of oneself. In other words, a realistic opinion of yourself. Number two, a deep sense of one's moral littleness. Think about that. One's moral littleness. Number three, modesty, humility, lowliness of mind. So he says, have a realistic opinion of yourself, a humble opinion. Have a deep sense of your own littleness, specifically your own moral littleness. In other words, being very aware of your own weaknesses, your own struggles, and the ways which you have blown it in your life. Humility, lowliness of mind, not to be conceited. Another way to put it might be, don't be puffed up, prideful, and self-righteous. What a contrast there is between humility and lowliness of mind and pride and self-righteousness. Let me read you some definitions of the term self-righteous. This is the way it's defined at thefreedictionary.com. Piously sure of one's own righteousness, moralistic, exhibiting pious self-assurance, self-righteous remarks. Merriam-Webster defines self-righteous like this. Convinced of one's own righteousness, especially in contrast to the actions and beliefs of others. Narrow-mindedly moralistic. Dictionary.reference.com defines it this way. Confident of one's own righteousness, especially when smugly moralistic and intolerant of the opinions and behaviors of others. That's self-righteousness. And those definitions make it sound pretty amazingly ugly. And it is. And you know what? Here's the sad part. We are all experts at being self-righteous. Now realize when I say that, I'm not putting anyone down. I just said we, including me, we are all experts at being self-righteous. We're experts at it and experts at being prideful. And just for fun, let me add something else in there. We're also experts at being judgmental, which is tied in with pride and self-righteousness. We're great at it, believers included. Whether it's pride and self-righteousness over our doctrine, or what we're doing that other people aren't doing, or what we're not doing that other people are doing, we get self-righteous and prideful and judgmental about knowledge, what we think we figured out that those other people haven't figured out, they're getting it so wrong. We're self-righteous over our way of seeing things. We're spot on, that other guy, he's completely off. We have so much pride. Do you realize that a proud look is number one on the abomination list in Proverbs chapter 6? Number one on the abomination list. And it's something we all struggle with daily. Looking down our nose at another person or a group because they just aren't up at the level we are. And we're all guilty. Let me give you a little bit of evidence. Check out the news feed on Facebook and see how many posts have to do with how the other guys, that other group, whether it's political, religious, or whatever, those other guys are the problem. Those guys are the big idiots. Our side has the truth. We're the smart ones. We have it all figured out. If they would just listen to us, oh, they're all wrong. And both sides of all debates have that attitude, or so it seems. I guess I'm being self-righteous and judgmental right now, aren't I? We see ourselves as being completely right. Self-right. The other person, so very wrong. We see ourselves at a higher place, higherness of mind rather than lowliness of mind, as Paul described it. And again, Proverbs 6 tells us that the proud look is number one on the abomination list. And we are masters of it, looking down our nose at other people, basking in our correctness, our rightness. And that basking itself is a reminder, or it should be, that none of us are right because self-righteousness is so wrong. Now, again, I'm not preaching at you today. I'm preaching to myself. You just get to go along for the ride, so I hope you enjoy it. A few months ago, we studied through Paul's letter to the Romans together. Remember that? And in that letter, Paul went to great lengths in the first three chapters to drive home the point that regardless of who you are or who I am, how hard we might try in and of ourselves to really be good and to get things right, to make ourselves right, Paul sums it up this way in chapter 3. There is none righteous, no, not one. And that's pretty amazingly all-encompassing. There is none righteous, no, not one. You could say there is none who is absolutely truly right in any way, including their doctrine or their belief structure. Not me, not you, not any religious organization. Out of all the 30,000 plus Christian denominations, think about it. As Paul wrote to the Corinthians, he said, if any of you think you know anything, you know nothing yet as it could be known. He didn't say you don't know anything, because we all know stuff, but he says you know nothing yet as it could be known. That is humbling, isn't it? See, we each know a little bit about the bigness of God, the power of God, the holiness of God. We know a little bit about the mercy and grace of God, but if we think we really absolutely know it, we're fooling ourselves. Paul said that right now, we're just seeing things dimly, and it's not going to be cleared up until we meet the Lord face to face. But how often do we, that's me included, act like we've got it all nailed down, we have it all figured out, but it's those other people who we look down on who just don't have it all figured out. Now, I'm not saying that you and I might, heavy emphasis on the word might, I'm not saying we might not know more than someone else, or we might not be more right than someone else. We may be. We might have a better grasp on the truth than another person, but even so, what right do we have to be puffed up about it? And what right do we have to look down our nose at another person who doesn't see or know the truth that we know and that we see? Here's another question, and I want you to sit and ponder this. What do we have that we didn't receive from the Lord by His grace? What do you have that He didn't give you, including the little knowledge and understanding that you have? After all, even faith is a gift from God, and to each one God has dealt a measure of faith. And so when it comes to knowing God, being reconciled to God, being justified, Paul lets us know that it's all God. It's all a matter of grace. And we have nothing, absolutely zero, to boast about, whether it's our standing with God or our knowledge of God. Yet, what is so strange to me, even though Paul tells us we have nothing to boast about, how much boasting and belittling and talking down takes place among all of us. We are to be messengers of grace, but we show so little grace to the people around us. As if it was our own smarts, or our huge desire to know God, or even worse, our own goodness that has taken us to where we are. Jesus said, "No one can come to me unless the Father draws them." Paul tells us in Romans that there is no one who seeks after God. Nope, not one. Paul makes it clear that God is the initiator, the one who gifts us with faith, the one who reveals to us truth. He is the one who through Christ has reconciled us to him. And I could go on and on. Let me ask you again, where's the boasting in all of that? Yet time and again, I've found myself, maybe not boasting out loud, but at the very least, boasting internally, and in one way or another, looking down my nose at someone else who just doesn't have it figured out as well as I do. Whether it's Bible doctrine, politics, or whatever it may be. Now, be honest. Have you ever caught yourself looking down your nose at another person in any way whatsoever about what they believe and how they see things, or even how high or low they wear their pants, therefore thinking, well, I'm a better person because I pull my pants up higher? I can't believe those people. Oh my goodness. Well, I would never. Those people are so wrong, but myself, I am right. Self-right. Self-righteousness. The proud look, looking down at that other person. And the very fact that we look down at people and make judgment calls about them is evidence of how much of a mess we really are ourselves. Paul, in his letter to the Romans, drives that point home as well. After talking about all sorts of sinful, rotten things, everything from completely rejecting the idea of a creator to idolatry and weird idol-worshipping practices to disrespecting parents and being unmerciful, and the list goes on in chapter 1 of Romans, as Paul comes to chapter 2, he says, "You are inexcusable, O man, whoever you are who judge, for in whatever you judge, you condemn yourself, for you who judge practice the same things." Practice the same things? Yeah, we'll come back to that in a minute, but it's so funny how we are. You read through chapter 1, and I don't know about you, but I tend to always catch sight of the stuff that other people are doing, the rotten things that I don't do, but those other people do, and the stuff I struggle with, I kind of ignore. I think that's just our human nature, and as I read through it, I get a little bit puffed up, because there's some things that Paul talks about that, oh man, that's got to be way worse than those little struggles of mine. At least I'm not like those guys. And pride, it begins to just swell up inside of me. As I think about those who are at least outwardly worse than me, I find myself getting a little smug. Self-righteous, yeah, I might have some issues, but at least I'm not like those guys over there. Paul would say to me, James, you're inexcusable. Whoever you are who judge, you're in a sense bringing condemnation on them, but don't you realize that you practice the same things? If you think they need or deserve to be condemned, what makes you think that you wouldn't deserve it too? In Romans 1, right after talking about people who reject God and worship idols and the things they do, he then says this, and listen carefully, because as he describes the symptoms of a person who is completely ungodly, you're going to see that at least a few of these symptoms fit you, just as they fit me. He says this, and this is starting in verse 28 of Romans chapter 1. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are unfitting, being filled with all unrighteousness. So he's saying, here's what someone looks like that is unright. He uses the word sexual immorality. In Greek, that's the word porneia. Wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness, whispering. He says they are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who knowing the righteous judgment of God or the correction of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. Now, I want you to think about what we just read. Envy and murder are placed side by side. Strife. Wow, that word might be a good word to describe what goes on between the 30,000 denominations who all claim to follow Christ, but yet can't agree on much of anything. Whisperers. Have you ever whispered about another person, talked about them behind their back? I have. We're guilty. Proud? boasters, disobedient to parents, unloving. How much love do you have for that saggy pants kid at Walmart? Unforgiving, unmerciful. That's a big one. Man, I hope that guy gets what he deserves. Have you ever thought that way? That's being unmerciful. Paul says, what the heck are you doing thinking that way about other people because of their issues when you have just as many serious issues? Remember when Jesus told the story about the Pharisee and the tax collector? I want you to turn to it. It's in Luke chapter 18. Luke chapter 18, the story starts in verse 9. It says this, also he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Pause right there. He spoke this parable to people who looked at themselves as being right and who looked down their noses at other people. Those other guys are not as good as we are. We see ourselves as being right and they are completely wrong. He says they were trusting in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. They looked down on others. They saw themselves as superior than others. And here's the parable, verse 10. Two men went up to the temple to pray. One a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. I'll pause right there. He's saying, God, I look around and I see a lot of dirty, rotten people doing things that I would never do. I'm a notch above them, aren't I? Not only because I don't do what they're doing, but because of the good things I'm doing. I fast twice a week. I tithe of everything I have. Thank you, God, that I'm so much better than those other people. Now, I want you to notice that the things he was doing were good things to do, and the things he was not doing were good things to not be doing. But the whole issue is an issue of the heart. Verse 13. And the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. What a contrast. For one, the Pharisee was looking at other people, trying to find someone worse than himself to make himself feel good about himself. Have you ever been guilty of that? I have. It's like, you know, when you really let your front yard go, weeds are growing, the grass is almost knee high. And you could look at your yard and go, what a mess. I need to fix this. I need to get to work. I need to take care of some things in my own yard. But instead, you drive around the neighborhood, and as long as you see some other yards that are worse than yours, more weedy, and the grass is higher, you feel pretty good about your yard and what you're doing. And you say, well, at least I'm not like that guy. Look at his filthy yard. That wasn't the tax collector's approach. He wasn't pointing any fingers at others to build himself up and make himself look good. He says in verse 13 again, and the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. It was just him and God. And in verse 14, look at what Jesus says. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. And it hurts, by the way. And he who humbles himself will be exalted. So Jesus says this guy was justified. He was seen as right in the sight of God. But the Pharisee, the religious leader, was seen in the sight of God as being completely wrong. And here's what's weird. The watching world, the religious world, the mass of humanity would have looked at the Pharisee and said, wow, what a right on guy. God must really dig him. Look at all the religious stuff he is doing, and look at all the other stuff he's not doing. Wow. But the problem was, he was filled with pride, self-righteousness, looking down his nose. And Christ is basically saying that everything about that was wrong. But the other guy, he went home right. Why? Humility. Genuine humility, not false humility, but an accurate, realistic view of himself. God have mercy on me. I'm a sinner. And he went home justified. And it wasn't because he did anything religious or paid some penance or made seven promises to God. All he knew was that he was a man with issues who needed mercy. In Romans chapter 2, after talking about judging others and how ridiculous it is, Listen to what Paul says in verse 9, Romans 2, verse 9. What then? Are we better than they? Not at all, for we have previously charged both Jews and Greeks that they are all under sin. The word sin means this, to fall short, to miss the target. It's like shooting an arrow at a target and you completely miss the target. He says, we are all under sin. We have all sinned. We've all fallen short. We all miss the mark, no matter who you are. And he says, are we better than they? Nope, because we all miss the mark. He's saying none of us are better than anyone else. We all fall short in all sorts of ways. We miss the target, even in regard, my friend, to doctrine and what we think we know, and especially in how we try to share it with people. We all fall short in that. We all know some things, but none of us have it all figured out. None of us are completely right. In verse 10 of that chapter, he says, there is none righteous, no, not one. Then he says, there is none who understands. But yet, we act like we know it all, like we understand it all. Later in that chapter, he says, the poison of asps is under our lips. In other words, so much of what we say to one another isn't life-giving. It isn't edifying. It doesn't bear fruit in the life of those who hear it. It's like venom from a snake. Oh, man. I've talked longer than I had planned on talking. I didn't think I'd have a lot to say about this. I mean, after all, how do you talk about self-righteousness without coming off as being totally self-righteous? How do you talk about being judgmental without being judgmental yourself? Have you ever caught yourself saying, man, I can't believe that person. They're so judgmental. What are you doing? You're judging them. Anyway, what's the practical application? Well, I think the practical application is something we find in Paul's letter to the Colossians and something he says in that letter in chapter 4. And it's something that you and I need to take to heart, especially as we go out and share our beliefs, our views with other people, whether it's face-to-face, which is the preferred method, or in this age we're living in with social media. I mean, have you noticed how much arguing takes place there? And let me tell you, I've seen no real fruit in it. I don't think anyone has changed their worldview or gone from one side of a belief system to another because of people talking down to them or arguing with them on Facebook. When we're face-to-face, at least we have to realize the person we're talking to is a living, breathing, real-life, flesh-and-blood person, not just a digital image on a screen, and we just type these things without thinking, and the poison of asps is under our fingertips on the keyboard at times. Anyway, in Colossians chapter 4, in verse 2, Paul first encouraged his readers to be super prayerful. He says, continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. I want to encourage you to take that to heart, to be prayerful about what you say to people and what you post on Facebook or what you tweet or however it is you're communicating with people. Continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it. You know what we need to do? I think we need to ask Father for the right words. Before you type that response to a person or respond to them verbally face to face, ask Father to help you reflect His heart and His nature in your words. Ask Him to help you not to be self-righteous in it or to look down at others like the Pharisee in the parable which Jesus told. This is so important because once those words go out there, there is no taking them back, even if it's done verbally. You can't put the words back in your mouth. And listen, this is a voice of experience. How I wish I could take back a million words that have spewed out of my mouth in the past, words that I spoke without thinking and without praying. And 500,000 words I've spewed out in chat rooms and on Facebook, which were not spoken in humility, words that were full of self being right, self righteousness. Father has humbled me a lot, and I think I do a little bit better now than I used to, but still, oh, what a struggle. In verse 3 of that same chapter, Paul says, meanwhile, praying also for us that God would open to us a door for the word to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in chains, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. My friend, please pray the same thing for me, and I'll pray it for you. Father, help us to speak the mystery of Christ, to make it manifest as we ought to speak it. Well, if Paul needed prayer in this area, how much more do we need it? Then in verse 5, he says, walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside. Man, be wise with how you approach and how you talk to those who don't yet know the Lord, to those who don't yet know His grace. He says, redeeming the time, making good use of the time. My friend, we only have a little amount of time. Ask Father to help you know how best to use the time you have. Is it going to be best spent arguing online, trying to prove that you are right? Is there any self-righteousness, self-rightness in that? Or is there some better way for us to use our time? Father, help us each to know how to best redeem the time you've given us. And then he says, let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each other. I pray, Father, help us to season our speech and our Facebook posts or whatever it is we're doing. Help us to season it with grace. Let our speech be seasoned with salt that would stir up a thirst in the hearts of others to know more and to hear more, to respond to you. Help us not to speak words that poison people. Lord, help us to speak with grace, always seasoning it with salt. As we share with others the great and wonderful news about you, your love for all of us, which is proven on the cross of Calvary through your only begotten Son, the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world. Help us, Father. Help us in our daily struggle with self-righteousness and pride. And I thank you that you hear this prayer, Father. Amen.